Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Monday, April 8th, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. The federal government last week ordered the National Park Service to reinstate Mary Miller as superintendent of the Sitka National Historical Park. Miller was removed from her job in 2010 when she refused to accept a transfer to Anchorage. KCAW's Ed Ronco reports.
The order came April 3rd from the Merit Systems Protection Board in Washington, D.C. The National Park Service must put Miller back in her old job within 20 days and restore her pay going all the way back to the date she was let go, August 6th, 2010.
I've actually not had a lot of time to process this.
Mary Miller.
It felt like the right thing always, and I knew with, you know, over time and just being persistent and consistent in my conviction that the system would eventually work and that I would, justice would be served.
In April 2010, Miller had just presided over the kickoff celebration of Sitka National Historical Park's 100th anniversary. The year ahead held many events which Miller helped plan. Shortly after that kickoff event, the Park Service offered her a transfer to be a native liaison in Anchorage, a brand new position. Miller, who is Tlingit, said she read the job description and felt she did not meet the position's requirements.
You needed to be an expert in federal Indian law. And, you know, I'm not an expert in federal Indian law. I'm just native.
At first, the job offer was voluntary. Miller declined, saying that besides being unqualified for the position, she liked her work at the park and Sitka was her home, and that she wanted to stay. She was then told the transfer to Anchorage was not voluntary, a directed reassignment in official language, and that if she declined, she would be removed from her job in Sitka. Miller again said no to a move to Anchorage, and in August 2010, the Park Service fired her. An administrative judge in San Francisco sided with the Park Service. Miller appealed to the board in Washington, D.C., and won her case.
Well, obviously, it's our intention to fully comply with the Merit System Protection Board's decision. It's why I'm down here.
Joel Hard is the deputy director for the Park Service's Alaska region.
The board's decision is a final decision, and we're obliged to implement that decision. And I want to make certain that everybody involved understands the regional director and my personal commitment to make sure that's undertaken and undertaken professionally and transition Mary back in and welcome her to her job.
Hard said the park's current superintendent, Randy Larson, will probably overlap with Miller to help her transition back into her job. Larson came to Sitka from the top job at Glacier Bay National Park. Hard said Larson has done a good job in Sitka and in the state, and that the Park Service will look for a way to keep him in the Alaska region. Miller's reinstatement drew quick praise both from the Alaska Federation of Natives and from the Sitka Tribe of Alaska. Miller says she'll spend the next 2 weeks moving out of her current job as transportation director for Tlingit and Haida Central Council and start preparing to resume her job with the National Park Service. She says she's looking forward to being back at the park.
I believe that the managers that were, you know, making the decisions at the time, you know, had to have been operating and making decisions on what they thought was really best.
The reinstatement order's 20-day deadline would mean Miller would have to be back in her job by April 23rd. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Five Alaska senators have organized a new coalition around an old idea. The Senate Coastal Caucus has been featured of past legislatures, but never as a formal organization. Now Senators Bert Stedman, Gary Stevens, Donnie Olson, Dennis Egan, and Peter Michiki have decided to play for keeps. Robert Woolsey reports.
Sitka Republican Bert Stedman organizes the Coastal Caucus and calls meetings, but he says that with only five members, there won't be any need for an actual chairman. Five doesn't sound like a big coalition, but Alaska has only 20 senators. All of the Coastal Caucus members are in the 15-member majority. Senator Stedman has done his math.
When all five of us agree on something, it'll definitely make an impact.
Stedman says the Coastal Caucus has been an informal feature of the Alaska Senate for about 10 years and consisted of himself, Gary Stevens from Kodiak, and Tom Wagoner from Kenai. The three would occasionally meet to discuss policy issues of common interest. Because of changes in the political landscape in the capital, the new Coastal Caucus is going to meet more often.
After the restructuring of the Senate, it became very evident that the interest needed to be broadened out, and coastal communities needed to have a voice in that. And the way to do that more effectively was to formalize the group a little bit more and expand it.
Senator Wagner lost his seat in the primary last year, but his successor, Pete Machiki of Soldotna, is on board. Donnie Olson from Golovin is also in, as is Juneau's Senator Dennis Egan. Stedman and Gary Stevens, until last year, were two of the biggest players in the Senate as co-chair of the Finance Committee and Senate President, respectively. They governed in a coalition with 10 Senate Democrats. Now that the new Republican majority runs the Senate, Stedman is candid about the Coastal Caucus's role in balancing the influence of the rail belt. The Coastal Caucus could have gone a step further, but chose not to.
The area that we're missing, of course, is out in the Aleutian Chain and the big deltas of the Yukon and Kuskokwim, and that's Lyman Hoffman, and he sits in the minority. But I'm sure we're going to have conversations with him from time to time also.
Stedman says the main policy drivers for the Coastal Caucus will be energy, transportation, and communication. He stresses that the caucus is working toward balance, not polarity. He does not want the legislature to lose a sense of common purpose that has taken years to develop.
I've counseled my colleagues that going back to the urban-rural divide in Alaska is not a good idea. It's not in the best interest of the citizens of the state and creates a somewhat difficult working environment. And quite frankly, a lot of our citizens then get left out or pushed into the background. And there's no doubt in my mind that that's the direction that the legislative arena has taken.
Stedman says the Senate Coastal Caucus has been in the works for about a month. Its first steps will be to take a hard look at several Senate bills which have fiscal notes in the hundreds of millions, with much of that funding targeted at the rail belt. The caucus will also examine the composition of the Board of Fisheries and other policymaking bodies which may not have adequate coastal representation. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Steve Hendrickson is the curator of collections at the Alaska State Historical Museum in Juneau. He's encountered a lot of fascinating history in his job, but one of the most peculiar stories is the case of the missing moon rock. KSTK's Shady Grove Oliver has more.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. The world watched and listened as Neil Armstrong became the first person to set foot on the surface of the moon on July 20th, 1969. Museum curator Steve Hendrickson remembers the moment well.
My initial interest came when I was a little kid, and I watched the Apollo missions on TV. I remember at school when Apollo 11 actually landed on the moon, we had a big assembly, and they wheeled in the big old black and white TV. There was only one in the whole school at the time, and on a big stand, and there was the whole assembly watched the moon landing, and I was just captivated.
Armstrong, along with fellow Apollo 11 crew members Buzz Aldrin and Michael Collins, carried many things back with them from that journey into space. They carried the pride of a nation, the amazement of the world, and 40 pounds of moon rocks. That's how two moon rocks ended up in the Alaska Transportation Museum in Anchorage, along with an Alaska state flag carried to the moon by NASA's final moon mission, Apollo 17.
We actually went to the Nixon Presidential Library and got photos of Richard M. Nixon handing the moon rock to our governor, Keith Miller, in 1969, and it was a gift to the people of Alaska.
One of the rocks was from Apollo 17. The other was from the Apollo 11 mission. Fast forward to September 6, 1973. That day, an arsonist set fire to the museum. Hendrickson says the rock survived the disaster. It was pulled out of the wreckage by the then curator's 17-year-old stepson named Coleman Anderson. He kept it and never told the museum where it was. Hendrickson began working at the museum two decades later, in the early 90s.
And my first week of work, the former curator told me, you know, that we had had another moon rock in the collection from Apollo 11, but that one had been stolen.
For nearly 40 years, the Apollo 17 rock and the flag sat on display alone, with only a blank space where the Apollo 11 moon rock should have been. The museum staff thought they would never see the purloined piece again.
So out of the blue, about 2 years ago, we were sued by the guy that had it. He was suing the state for ownership of the Apollo 11 moon rock that he admittedly took out of the museum. And I guess he felt that he had ownership of it somehow, and he was challenging the state's ownership of it.
A boy no longer, Anderson had grown up to become one of the most recognizable faces on American reality TV.
So he was one of the crab boat captains featured on the first season of Deadliest Catch. So he was famous in his own right for that, but now he's even more famous because he tried to get us to buy our moon rock back from him.
The state kept fighting and won. Meanwhile, the moon rock had been handed over to NASA for safekeeping. After the lengthy dispute, Henriksen says he was given the honor of bringing it home. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
The Alaska Senate has passed a $2 billion capital spending package. The bill includes about $1.9 billion in capital and other projects for the next year, as well as some spending items for the current year. Saturday's 17-3 vote followed several failed attempts by minority Democrats to amend the bill to add things like additional funding for engineering buildings within the University of Alaska system. The measure now goes to the House. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. And here's a look at Sitka's own weather. It's currently 40 degrees under overcast skies. Today you can expect rain with highs around 46, southeast winds 5 to 15 miles per hour, increasing to 15 to 25 miles per hour late in the morning, gusts to 35 miles per hour developing in the afternoon. Tonight, windy, rain, heavy at times, lows around 40, southeast wind 20 to 30 miles per hour with gusts to around 45 miles per hour. You are listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka.